Tired of juggling sales tools or spending hours on prospecting just to book a few meetings? Meet Apollo, the go-to-market platform for finding leads, connecting with buyers, and closing deals all in one place. Apollo gives you access to over 210 million contacts and AI that handles all your busy work, finding leads, drafting emails, and even prioritizing your day. So stop paying for five different sales tools when one does it all. Visit apollo.io and sign up free today.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Frothy, home of the fun, frivolous, lowbrow froth your group chat excels at. We're here to talk about the best things in the world of pop culture, from celebrities to influencers and all the nonsense in between, and you're once again joined by me, Eloise, a London-based 27-year-old writer who spends a lot of time chatting and reading about the fun, silly topics that maybe your boss, parents or partner question why you enjoy so much. Each week we're going to be talking about the best bits that pop culture has to offer, and this is your safe space to enjoy, dissect and binge on the frothy nonsense that brings you a smile. If that sounds up your street, then let's dive right in with the best of the brain rot, the silly stories that got us talking this week. Alright you guys, up first is a story that I saw all over BookTok that I wasn't aware of at all, but having now seen it, I'm really quite interested in, and that is that design studio Mina Lima have not been commissioned to create an illustrated version of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, so book number 4 onwards. They've illustrated the first 3 books and fans have adored them, but they won't be creating anymore, and that has caused some upset, I'll be honest. Before the news broke, I wasn't even aware of these books, but now I do know about them. I would say that they are really beautiful and I can understand the attachment fans have to them. And I think part of that is the fact that Mina Lima is the design studio behind the props in the Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts films. So, you know, they're a company that's been tied to this storytelling universe for decades. They know the stories, the characters inside out. And I think that because of that, the books are a really visual tie to the films and quite a special sort of memorabilia item compared to, you know, the wands or, I know, the chocolate frogs that maybe more people have. Not that there's anything wrong with those items either, but I think the books are a really nice touch, especially if you're a reader and maybe you found the story first and foremost through the books as opposed to the films. But yeah, BookTok has been a little all over the place, or beside itself, I guess you might say. There were a lot of very upset fans. And that's to be expected. Harry Potter is an institution, and with a new TV series in production, I don't think the hype is dying down anytime soon. Mina Lima broke the news with a statement on their Instagram saying that they know that the fans were eagerly awaiting the fourth instalment, but that it wouldn't be coming, and neither would any of the other books. So, you know, cherish the 3 you've got, but unfortunately that is it. Now, it was announced last year that HBO would be creating a TV show based on the Harry Potter books, and I think the plan is about, you know, one series of the show per book, so 7 series, although they have said they're sort of going to be delivering this over 10 years, which is just a mammoth project. It is huge. I imagine the funding there, the pre-planning must have been just intense. And with that, they're hoping to release the first series in 2026, so about a year and a half away now. But I would say they're moving a little bit slowly. They only announced this year, like June time, so almost a year after first announcing the project, that they have picked a writer and a director for the series. So, you know, they're approaching this with thought. There is, there's a lot of planning going into this, but I don't know. I'd still say that's moving slowly. I'm not sure about you. I think that's, maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? I don't make movies or TV shows for a living, so I'm maybe not the person to ask. But I do think that this new TV show with HBO is maybe the reason that the Mina Lima books have been decommissioned. I could, of course, be wrong. I've not seen anyone else say this, so there's a real chance I am barking up the wrong tree and completely deluded with this. But, you know, Warner Brothers own the rights to the Harry Potter films, and J.K. Rowling owns all the rights to the Harry Potter characters. She'll also be an executive producer on the upcoming HBO series, and of course HBO is part of the Warner Brothers Discovery family. So in really basic terms, the TV show isn't competing with the films. It's not coming from a different creative direction. It's very much the same company, the same brains, in loose terms, that are creating the TV show that created the films. But I wouldn't be surprised if with the progression of the TV show and the sort of Harry Potter for the new generation, you know, a new style, a new look, that it's been decided that actually we need to sort of stop anything that maybe ties directly to the films that isn't the massive money makers, like, for example, Garston Studios in the UK or the theme park world in Florida. So decommissioning Mina Lima makes some sense. HBO is an American company. The TV shows will be made in America, I suspect, with American actors. Probably American costume designers, you know, set designers, prop makers. And Mina Lima are based in London. And I don't think they're an overly big design studio. I think they maybe won the first contract for the first film and they carried on going. But I don't think they're based at all in America. And as we're entering a new Harry Potter series that maybe is more America-centric, it wouldn't surprise me if J.K. Rowling has made the decision to make that a really visual move as well. Quite quietly, I think. I'm not sure anyone was expecting the backlash from the Mina Lima decision that did occur. But I mean, maybe that's not the move you would make, but I can see the logic behind it. It feels odd to sort of be making something new that visually maybe looks a little bit different to the films, while also still pumping out things that still tie to the films so creatively, especially when Harry Potter is a wizard. He has a wand, he'll need a wand, so the wands will be in the TV series, and therefore it doesn't make sense to decommission the wands that are being sold in all the theme parks and the stores, etc. But it could be that actually the props have a really different look, and as it's the prop designers who are illustrating these books, the books have a really distinctive look and therefore maybe don't match the upcoming TV show. On the flip side, there's also the argument to be made that Mina Lima is very pro-LGBTQ+ rights. They've made no secret of that on their socials. And of course, we all know where J.K. Rowling sits on these conversations. So bluntly, their beliefs don't align. And it could even be as simple as a personal falling out between the two of them. I don't think that is the case, because Mina Lima's illustrated books have come out over the last few years. And we've obviously been aware of J.K. Rowling's views longer than that. But for now, I think it's really potential that this is a case of out with the old and in with the new within the Harry Potter empire. But what do you think? Have I completely misread this? Am I completely deluded? I wouldn't be surprised, you know, but I do think there is some weight there to sort of say maybe this is a real turning point now that the TV show is making progress, that actually certain contracts need to be cut, paused, whatever you want to call it, while a new look and a new style sort of comes into the Harry Potter omniverse. But yeah, let me know what you think. Drop a line on our socials, and I'd be really interested to hear whether or not you think that I'm completely misreading this. And the next thing we're going to talk about, I'll be honest, I have already recorded once, I listened back to it, I didn't think I'd summarised it well enough, so we're going again, guys. And this is the story about what is going on with the cast of It Ends With Us. There is so much going on around this film that I've got the impression that even the people who don't know who Colleen Hoover is, who didn't know the film was in production, who haven't read the book, are aware that there is a film out, or, you know, has just been released, that has definitely got some tension around it. To explain a little bit better, It Ends With Us is the best-selling novel by Colleen Hoover. It was published in 2016 and it spent 132 weeks on the New York Times bestsellers list, which is just huge. It's an incredibly popular book. I've not read it myself, but many friends have. I've recommended it all the time. I see it all over BookTok. It's always in Waterstones. It's definitely one that has a name for itself. And it's the love story between florist Lily Bloom and neurosurgeon Ryle Kincaid. I struggle to say that, guys. Ryle Kincaid, whose relationship turns violent when Lily's school love, you know, high school romance, Atlas, he re-enters her life. Ryle is played by Justin Baldoni, who both bought the rights to the film and actually came onto the project originally as the film's director, and he then took on the role of Ryle when Colleen Hoover actually suggested it, because she was heavily involved in the film from the get-go. And then Lily is played by Blake Lively, and she agreed to come onto the project if she could take the role of producer. So Already, we've got two big stars, big characters, taking on lead roles while also being involved in the film's like actual creation as well. And I think it's really important to note here that Blake Lively is obviously known for her acting, but you know, she's not one of those actors who year in, year out is in a major movie. She's known for running the drinks company, whose name has completely slipped my mind. But for ages, they just did like the mixers, they just did soft drinks because Blake herself does not drink. But more recently, they have launched, I think, pre-mixed drinks, if I'm correct. And, you know, she's also someone who is known for how much she loves family life, how much she enjoys being married and her kids, and I get the impression she's very much one of America's sweethearts. She comes across as just lovely, friendly, talented, generous, blessed, like, you know, she's got the whole thing going for her. So she started in acting, she's definitely broadened her range, and I do think she's actually using the press tour of It Ends With Us to launch a second company, Blake Brown Beauty, which at the moment is selling a hair care range, notably without any conditioner, which is a whole other conversation. But yeah, so, you know, she is making big moves with this movie. It was already a big movie, but she is definitely working to make it bigger than maybe organically or naturally it would have been without the effort she is putting in. And I do think it's paying off. You know, we are talking about her and the movie and her new business. So she knows what she's doing. But this isn't what has caused the gossip. What has caused the gossip and the belief that there is drama and tension around this cast is the apparent falling out between Justin Baldoni and the rest of the cast, including Blake Lively and including Colleen Hoover. And this has kind of grown over the past few months. So in May, when the press tour started, there were the usual cast interviews, everything looked really normal. Baldoni was even interviewed with Colleen Hoover. You know, all the usual stuff, or everything that, you know, would associate a film with this level of casting to have. This then continues into June, and Justin isn't seen as much, but apparently he was actually quite ill with an infection, and apparently was hospitalised, which I wasn't aware of up until I read about it, but yeah, apparently was hospitalised, so obviously wasn't nearly as involved in the press as he had been the month before. But everyone else is still, you know, they're doing this little, like, vox pop interviews, they're spreading the word, people are chatting about it. And this is when it starts to sort of like enter my For You page. This is when I start to sort of see glimpses and photos, because as this is going on and we sort of enter August, people start to notice that the cast members and Colleen Hoover aren't following Justin on Instagram. He still follows them, but they don't follow him. And people do think that they used to follow him. So there's been sort of like a mass unfollowing of Justin, which is weird in itself, but it gets weirder when fans notice that he is never, like, not once interviewed or photographed with any of the cast after May. Like, May we have him with Colleen Hoover, but after that there is absolutely no reference to him being involved in this film by anybody apart from he himself. And with that, when he is interviewed, he's interviewed solo. He attends these events, but he attends them solo. All the other casts are there having photos, being interviewed with others, chatting away about how talented others are, how much of a joy they were to work with. But he is avoided. If the cast are asked questions about him, the moves they make to sidestep it, to twist the question, to make sure they don't have to really talk about him is, I mean, it's a talent in itself. These people have been press trained. I'm very impressed. But yeah, so he's not really referenced. He didn't go up on stage to introduce the movie at the premiere alongside Blake. And when he was asked really pointedly on the red carpet if he would direct the sequel called It Starts With Us, which is another book by Colleen, he very, very politely said that he thought he probably wouldn't, and that actually, you know what, Blake was a much better fit for it, and that she was ready to take the wheel there and to lead and to direct, and that she was very much ready to take on that role. On the red carpet, Blake also shared that her husband, Ryan Reynolds, who hadn't officially been tied to the film at all, he's actually, as we're aware, promoting his own film at the moment, which is Deadpool and Wolverine, I could have said that the wrong way around. But either way, he's got a massive blockbuster out at the moment in cinemas. But he apparently wrote the meet-cute scene between Ryle and Lily. It's on the roof. We've seen it in the trailer. It's very sweet, very romantic. But curious that someone who's not involved in the project decided, A, to write it, and B, that, you know, that it was then presented and included in the final project. Maybe that's not as odd as I think it is. I obviously don't work in film, but it tickled my interest. I think it's absolutely fair to say. There's also been conversation about whether or not this took place during the writer's strike in America. That's not been confirmed or denied, and I wouldn't even begin to know how to guess about that. But I do think it's fair to say it's probably more than meets the eye going on behind the scenes. And then there's the differing approaches to promoting the actual film. They're almost promoting different films. If it wasn't for, you know, the fact we know they're not, and the shared colour palette in some of the interviews, you know, the florals, the pinks, the light colours, I wouldn't be surprised if you did think it was two different films. Justin is very much promoting it in a really kind of like honest, slightly serious way, you know, addressing the fact that this is a domestic violence story, and it's to be treated as such, you know. It's not too frivolous, it's not too silly, it's very much like, it's a really serious, heavy, upsetting topics take place within the film, and I think he's really aware of it. He doesn't really want to shy away from it, and he wants to make sure, you know, people know what they're going to see, and that it speaks to survivors and people experiencing domestic violence. On the other hand, I think it's fair to say that Blake is taking a slightly more light-hearted approach, and she is definitely promoting the rom-com side of it a lot more. She's, you know, she said it was one to see with your girls, one to wear florals to, you know, grab your girlfriends, have a little date night, enjoy the movie. And that matches with her vibe. She's wearing florals at every press event. She looks stunning. This isn't a Blake Lively solo thing. This is what everybody does currently, you know, when promoting a very big film. And for, you know, for crying out loud, she wore a Deadpool-themed, inspired outfit to the Deadpool and Wolverine screening a couple of months back. So it's not, I don't think this is something we can critique or question her on. I think that's entirely normal and not something to be picked apart, but just something to, like, you know, note that she's going for that angle, and she's going for it strongly, and it's working, it's sticking. People know what her messaging is. So, you know, she's pushing this as a really big film. It's a big film for her. It's a big moment. It was always going to be a big film, but she is putting everything behind it, and I think it's fair to say that she's almost using it as a relaunch for her acting career. I've not seen her go this big around a film in a very long time. And I think what kind of backs that idea is that, you know, she's apparently going to be on the cover of Vogue's September edition, which, if you know anything about Vogue, September is their biggest date, it's their biggest month, it's when they produce the chunkiest volume they do all year. It's a really special issue, and it's a very sought after cover, so to secure it, it's an accomplishment in and of itself. And, you know, with these very different approaches, and with the internet investigation that fans have done, gossip has just gone wild. It's definitely agreed there's been a falling out, most likely between Blake and Justin. And with these very different, like, promotional angles, and with the internet investigation that fans are doing, people are saying that maybe they've had a creative difference with the film, Justin taking a slightly more serious approach, Blake not so much, and that apparently they even made competing cuts at the final edit. How you can prove this, I don't know. I have found no concrete evidence on this, but it has been talked about so much online that it almost seems to be, like, taken as fact, even though I don't think that's a fair assessment or assumption at all. But yeah, people think Blake and Justin have fallen out, and it very much seems you're either Team Blake or you're Team Justin. And, you know, a lot of what I've seen has been very much pulling Blake Lively down as, like, you know, saying she's power hungry, saying she's difficult to work with, saying that she's senseless around the issue of domestic violence. But I don't think that matches. Like, you know, the cast have very much stuck with Blake. They've stuck to Blake. They're still following Blake on socials. They're still taking photos with Blake. They're still talking about her, praising her, saying that she'd be great to direct the next installment. And, you know, Justin's the one that isn't receiving this support, but does seem for some reason to be receiving the support online. And we should remember that Colleen Hoover was involved throughout this project and has definitely aligned herself with Blake. There's no denying it. She praises Blake in every interview she's done. She follows her still. I've also seen people suggest that, you know, oh, well, obviously Justin just, you know, understood the importance and the power of the script and the story way more than Blake did. It's gone over her head, you know. She's completely taken the wrong angle. And I fundamentally disagree with that. If the author is backing Blake, then, you know, and it's the author's story at the end of the day. How can we miss that? It's her words. It's her story. She knows what it means. No matter how big a fan you are, she will know it better than you. She knows it best. She knows his characters inside and out. She knows how she pictured it. And if she is backing the film as it is, I think we very much need to trust that these women know what they're doing. And I do think fans need to take a step back and really think about what they're saying. You know, poor Colleen, she's had to put her TikTok account on private because the backlash and the assumptions in the investigation are just, you know, this is not what she signed up for. This is obviously not what she thought the culmination of this project would be. And I think this is just like, this is somewhat drowning out the film, which is such a shame. And I think, you know, it can be both. You can have a very serious, upsetting topic like domestic violence wrapped up in a romance, because in so many ways that's how these things start. They start as romances and they grow, and I think that's such an accurate telling of life. So I don't know, I think this gossip and this drama is not something that we should be celebrating in the way that we are necessarily. And I don't think we're ever going to find out exactly what happened between them. I get the impression Justin will be putting a lot of distance between himself and the film. I believe he's hired a new member for his team, someone who's really experienced in crisis management, which maybe suggests he's expecting there's worse to come. I don't really know. But whatever the reason he is putting distance between himself and the film, whether it's personal reasons, whether it's crisis control, whether it's an attempt to save his image, I don't know. But I do think it's really interesting how incredibly polarizing this gossip and this falling out has been for people who haven't even seen the film. You guys, like, so many of us have not seen the film and we've not read the book yet, but everyone's got an opinion, and it blows my mind. You know, this drama has basically taken on its own fan base. It's its own storyline separate from the film in so many ways, and I just think no one comes out a winner. You know, poor Blake is being torn apart on socials for supposedly being senseless, which I just don't think is the case. And, you know, poor Justin has been ostracized by his cast and therefore by so many fans, potentially for something that is correct. I don't think you can blindly follow that either. But yeah, let me know what you think. I'd be really interested to know. I'm thoroughly confused, if I'm going to be honest, and kind of gobsmacked at the way this has absolutely grown. And I do think that's testament to TikTok, because I don't think we'd have seen that prior to TikTok. I don't think it would have grown the same way on Instagram. Twitter potentially, but Twitter has changed so much in the last few years since Elon Musk bought it that it's hard to remember the like good old days, so to speak. But yeah, let me know what you think. I'm incredibly interested, and I do wonder whether or not you agree with me. Up next, we've got Pop to Pin, which is something I've seen this week, enjoyed so much that I've skim read and now I want to come back to, but haven't quite got there yet. So I've popped a pin in it. And this is, of course, Bama Rush, which is just, it's so different. Like, culturally, I'm from London. I haven't yet been to America. I've certainly never been to Alabama. And Bama Rush Talk is, it's just like fun. There's obviously the darker side to it, of it being like a lot of privilege, a lot of wealth, a lot of materialism. But on the other hand, it is just such an interesting look into the world of Alabama University sororities. I have never been in a sorority. We didn't have them in my uni. But it's incredible. The room tours, the outfits, the high energy, the general excitement and joy that comes out of these videos. I am rooting for all of these girls. I know in a couple of weeks we will have the devastation and the heartbreak when some of these girls won't get into the sororities they wanted to or won't get into any sorority, and those are really hard to watch, those videos. But for right now, I have so much fun watching this sort of cultural movement take place over TikTok. It's happened the last few years. Maybe it was on Instagram as well. I didn't ever spot it on Instagram. It probably is there now. But I love it as something completely alien to me, but something I can really understand as well. Like, I get it. These girls want to be involved. They want to take part. It's like a whole extra layer now. You know, you've got the task they do to rush, and now you also have the, like, behind the scenes of the rush. And I don't know, if you're having a bad day and you're trying to find something that's completely random, or if you're having a tough week at work or uni and you just think, I want to completely disassociate from my life right now, look up Bama Rush. You'll either love it or you hate it, but either way, you will feel probably grateful for the life you've got, and also just, like, gobsmacked at the life some people do have. And if you're really curious at, like, a further behind the scenes look, I definitely take a watch of the videos different creators are making about the cost of the outfit that these girls are wearing, you know, because it's the jewelry and the designer shoes and the matching, like, two-piece and the hair accessories and the makeup they use to what get ready in the morning, as well as, you know, the girls who are already in the sorority who are, you know, looking for new sisters, how they have decorated their rooms, and what they want to bring and why they've chosen XYZ pillow or anything like that. It's mind-blowing in the best way. It's utterly peculiar, and I have watched it every year I've known about it. I've skimmed it this week, but I will definitely be going back to have a little bit of a TikTok rot at some point and just to have a little scroll, because, guys, it's bananas. It's so different to my life, and I kind of love it. And finally, guys, some recommendations for this week. I've got two this week because I couldn't decide. And you know what? It's week two. Why not give you two? The first is Mary Fran on TikTok. She's an American school teacher and content creator. And I came across her a couple of weeks back when her Scottish boyfriend was first coming across to visit her, and she was prepping her room, her house, making her plans for when he landed to, so, you know, they could spend some time together. I think he was there for about a week, and I love their love. She is incredible. She is so cheerful. She makes really lovely, really engaging content. He is quirky. He's a stand-up comedian, I believe, based on my, like, stalking, if I'm going to be entirely honest with you. And they seem like a perfect fit. He seems to utterly adore her. And they got engaged while he was across the pond. And I believe they're getting married in, like, the new year. And then he's moving back to America. Guys, I can't get over how invested I am in this relationship. Every time she comes up now, because I follow her, I watch the whole video. They're not ones I skip. I love to watch what she makes. She is just unafraid to be entirely herself and entirely joyful and entirely honest and cheerful. And obviously, I'm sure she has bad days. She just doesn't put those online. Well, not that I've seen. She's worth a follow because honestly, when her videos pop up, they make my day. And then my second recommendation is I have just finished reading A Court of Thorn and Roses, the entire series. And guys, I'm not okay. I miss those characters like I miss my friends sometimes. They are books that I wish I'd not, like, steamrolled through. They were just so much fun to read. And they're definitely books that got me back into reading. I used to read lots. I didn't read so much through uni because I was already reading so much for uni. I didn't really feel like doing anything else. And I've, you know, flipped in and out of reading since uni, but they have definitely got me back on the reading train. If you're looking for romance, if you're into fantasy, if you just want to sort of explore a whole new world, definitely give them a read. I can't shout about them enough. I would say that they only improve. Book one I loved, but book two was so much better. I didn't even know what book one was missing, but book two had it, whatever that was. And when I was buying books one and two, because I preemptively planned to love them, like, I was that dedicated to the series already, having just read the blurbs, this random girl in the bookshop who was shopping for herself literally stopped me and said, look, I don't normally read fantasy, but be prepared to lose a week of your life because I loved that series, and that's all I did for a week. I just inhaled them. And I've been exactly the same way. I adored them, and I think I might end up rereading them, you know. They are by Sarah J. Maas, and I am now looking at the rest of her works to see what else I fancy reading. I was hooked, utterly obsessed, you know, reading it before work, reading it on the way to work, reading it after work, weekends, evenings, dinner, lunch breaks, anytime I could, I would. So definitely give it a read or download the audiobook. Just get it in your life, guys. Well worth it. If you got this far, thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. This is obviously a really tiny, small, independent podcast. But if you enjoyed it, tell a friend, tell your mum, tell your sister. Subscribe to the first thing when next week's episode drops. And if you think, yeah, this is a bit of me, you can follow me on Instagram. We're at Frothy Podcast. And I look forward to seeing you there.